Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Hello and welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. This is going to be a fantastic episode, but before I go any further, a couple things. First of all, I want to let you know we are, of course, a podcast that discusses historical and New England gaming, and we're a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. But also, I want to explain what that little beginning thing was. You're probably thinking, what the heck is this? And that's not how the show begins. So today's episode, episode 157, is focused on Game of Thrones. In particular, the board game by Fantasy Flight Games. And I thought it'd be kind of funny. Maybe that didn't work, but kind of funny to do my own terrible version. Terrible. Really, it's just awful. Version of the theme song from the Game of Thrones TV show. So, if you enjoyed it or got a laugh, hurrah. And if not, I apologize, really. It was really bad. I thought, oh, you know, maybe I can start off and I'll use like a cover of the theme song, but even so, I would still have to get permission and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, I could do my own version for comedic effect. It was bad. So anyway, welcome all of you new and longtime listeners alike. As I said, this is the one and only Wargaming Recon podcast. And today's episode, Game of Thrones and Board Game Night, is episode 157. I'm going to talk about a few different things on the show and actually some other cool stuff outside of this main topic. Don't worry about remembering all of it, because I know a lot of you like to listen while you're commuting to and from work, or especially many of you like to listen while you're painting models and doing converting and all that sort of stuff. So you can't sit at the computer and be like, oh, Jonathan talked about this, and let me go here and look up this. People don't listen to podcasts that way. You don't listen to podcasts that way, right? You don't listen to Wargaming Recon just waiting for me to say, go here and do that. Don't worry. I have you covered, right? I try to make it nice and easy for everyone. You just have to remember the link to the show notes. Don't have to remember anything else, just a link to the show notes, because that'll get you covered. That'll let you get all the information that we talked about and have links to things and all that kind of cool stuff. Don't worry. It's at the show notes. WargamingRecon.com/WR157. That's WargamingRecon.com/WR157. That'll bring you to the show notes and you'll be golden, right? So today's show, Game of Thrones. By the time you listen to this, the new episode of the new season will be out. New book won't be because Mr. Martin's taking his time. It's okay, right? If you're not a fan of Game of Thrones, still listen, because I think this is a game that will appeal to a lot of people. And then I'm also talking about 1775, which is another great game. I've talked about it before, but I'll talk about it again. And then I have some cool announcements and mailbag stuff that's going to be really interesting and important, especially for later this podcast season of 2016. I don't know why I was about to say 2015. I'm living in the past, I guess. So this is an episode worth listening no matter whether you're a fan of Game of Thrones or you're not. Or again, this is a historical and New England gaming podcast. So Game of Thrones is probably not something that's normally going to pop up. And yet it fits because Board Game Night was really cool. And I'll talk about that. That's kind of the overarching umbrella, really, that I'm using to cover all of this. So Board Game Night. And let me talk about Board Game Night a little bit. It's been a long, long, long time since I've been able to get out and play some games with my buddies. This past Saturday, I knew that some people were going to be getting together. I said to my wife, what do you think? Any chance I can get out? We didn't have anything planned. So it worked, and I made plans to go, and I've made plans to go in the past. And then, of course, someone's gotten sick, myself, baby, my wife, someone. It's been a rough winter in early spring for all of us here. Yeah, Wargaming Recon Central. But I knew this was going to work, so I was really excited about it. I went to a local game store, Battleground Games and Hobbies, in Plainville, Massachusetts, and they have their headquarters, the main store, in Abington, Massachusetts. And I got together and I played some games with John Caputo and Carrie, and it was great because we used to play games together all the time way, way back. And then Carrie had kids and he wasn't able to play games so much anymore. Now his kids are older and John's daughter is older, so John's able to get out and Carrie's able to get out. We weren't sure if a couple other people were going to be able to play, but they had other things going on. So it was the three of us, and we actually started off playing 1775, which I will talk about later on in the show. I'm going to start off with Game of Thrones. Carrie brought Game of Thrones, and he had the expansion as well, but we played the base game. So that's what I'm going to talk about. This is the board game by Fantasy Flight Games. It's not the card game. I know there is a card game. This is not the card game. This is the board game. Now, I have played this game before, but it was like 8 or even 10 years ago. It was way before I was married. And at that point, believe it or not, I don't really know what Game of Thrones was. This was before the TV show. This was after the books had been out for a while. A bunch of my friends were at Battleground Games and Hobbies at the old Abington store, and they were playing. And they said, you should play. You'll like this game. And I was like, okay. And who are these people? What do the colors mean? And what am I supposed to do? And I didn't understand it. And I wasn't able to stay very long. And that was okay because I was terrible at it. And this time around, I was like, wait, name of the game is familiar. I think I played it before. I think it was terrible. I don't think I knew what I was doing. I'll give it a go. John hadn't played this. John has heard of the show in the books, but he hasn't read or watched either. Carrie is a huge fan, and he's absorbed all of that Game of Thrones, or Westeros, I should say, knowledge. And so Carrie's like, let's play the game, give it a try. And we were all like, okay, cool. So it was, as I said, my first time in a long, long time. One of the things I noticed about the game, if you are unfamiliar with it, and if you are, please correct me at any point. If I'm talking about stuff and you're like, that's not really how it goes, please do correct me because I don't want to give you misinformation. I try to do all my homework beforehand and get all that prep in, but it can be hard when I've only played a game basically one time. And I want to talk about it. And usually I try to play it multiple times, but it's not always possible, as is, proven by this time. I feel the game has a very steep learning curve, which is interesting because Fantasy Flight Games, I feel that in general, this stuff is pretty easy to dive into. This had quite a build up, and it was mainly because there's a lot to keep track of, a lot of different components, a lot of different rules, and then you have to keep in mind all the ways that it fits together and try to remember all of it. So it's a lot of information really to process. If you've never played the game before, you're like, what do I do and how do I do this and what do I do that? You're trying to figure out how you want to do all the different components and how you want to get those aspects to work together to create that bigger picture, to really give you the best chance of having fun, and ultimately of controlling Westeros. The goal of the game is you need to gain control of the Iron Throne and become the king of the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros. This board game really does capture the feel of the show. I'm most familiar with the show. I've read listened to the first book and part of the second book. I really do love what I've heard. Just it's a lot to digest. And it's hard when I'm listening to a book and it's so long. And like I take it out from work. I work in a library. You get 3 weeks to listen to it. Maybe you can renew it. Maybe you can't. And try to do that just while I'm commuting to and from work. And so it makes it tricky for me to get through like a really big book like this. But I'm very familiar with the TV show and I've read a lot online about the world of Westeros. And I feel that the game just makes you feel like you're living in the TV show, like you're living in Westeros, you're living in this world of Game of Thrones, Song of Fire and Ice, right? The way that they seem to do it is that they make each of the factions unique. So there are core abilities and core things that each faction has and each faction will do. But then each faction also has some special stuff that's unique to them, and that influences the way that they play the game, and that is representative of how things happen for them in Westeros, in the TV show, in the books. So for example, when we played, there was just three of us, so we did the three-player version, and Carrie played as the Lannisters, Jon played as the Starks, and I was House Baratheon. The Lannisters, for example, happened to get a lot of money, or power tokens, I believe they're called, a lot of money and power tokens very easily. As anyone knows who's familiar with Game of Thrones, a Lannister is known as always paying their debts, right? Because the house is wealthy. They are the money lenders for the kingdom. They're the ones that will pay off anything. And they get richer and richer by doing this and engaging in money laundering, basically. The House Baratheon has a lot of power because they start off controlling the Iron Throne, but that doesn't mean they're going to have it at the end of the game, right? But they have that. They're not going to have large armies, but they get that power. And then the Starks have a lot of resources. They're up in the north. They can actually easily control a lot of land and get a lot of spice to form a formidable army, I would say, from up there. But of course, they're near the wall. And on the other side of the wall are the wildlings. These are the untamed peoples, the free peoples you can think of, who live beyond the protection of the Seven Kingdoms. And they live out on the frontier. And every so often they try to come across the wall. This gigantic, think of it like the Great Wall of China, if you're not familiar with Game of Thrones. It's a gigantic wall, huge, really, really tall, as big as you can imagine. Like the Atlantic Wall in World War II, just really, really big, but like solid. No way over it, no way under it. It goes from coast to coast, kind of like Hadrian's Wall, all the way across that part of Britain. And Westeros goes all the way across Westeros. And you can't get around unless you go around by sea, but they're able to find little ways around. So when they come around, it causes problems. So not just for the Starks, although the Starks are right there on the border, but it can also impact everyone else later on. So as I said, the three-person version, the Lannisters, Starks, and House Baratheon were played. There's a fourth house that you can choose from. We divided out the houses randomly. None of us had a preference. We were just like, well, we'll just get randomly. It doesn't really matter. And then there are a couple other houses that are there, but they're neutral. So it's the Greyjoys and it's Martell, I believe, House Martell. And one thing I also noticed is the more I played, the more I really got to understand it. So although I do feel it's a very steep learning curve, each round that we played, and the game lasts 10 rounds, each round, I was picking up more. I was like, oh wait, this makes sense. I do this and I do that. The first turn was very rough. I didn't get a lot of it. I was really confused. And I was trying to watch what everyone else was doing to try to say, oh, so this happens, this and this, that. And I know I made a lot of mistakes, not just in the first turn, but throughout the game that we played. And we didn't go all the way to round 10, not to ruin it for you. We got, you know, along, but we didn't get all the way to round 10. And a lot of mistakes I know I made. And the more I play, the better I'll be. For me, it's not about being better. It's about having fun and being good enough so that I'm allowing my people that I'm playing with to have fun. Because if someone's just playing terribly, other people probably aren't going to have fun. Even if they're just in it to have fun, you want people to be able to put up a challenge and make it interesting. So if you do play the game, each turn really, goes in a prescribed order. So you start off with what's called the Westeros phase. And this represents random events, things that happen throughout the kingdom or beyond that you don't necessarily have any control of, but some things you do. So for example, I mentioned wildlings, right? When you flip cards in the Westeros phase, you have three separate decks. You turn over the top card from each deck. You go deck one, you turn that over, you resolve everything. Deck two, you turn that top card over, you resolve everything. Deck three, you turn the top card over, you resolve everything. Okay? You do this every turn except the first turn or first round. One of the things that could happen is it could be bad. The wildlings are wanting to raid. If the wildlings want to raid, all of the players have to secretly use some of their power tokens. Think of them like money or influence. Use those and decide how many of them you want to bid. You have a finite amount. Actions you do during your turn, deplete those. And you can get them back by certain orders, which we'll talk about in a minute. But you only have a finite amount. So once you bid them on something like this, whatever you bid is gone. In the case of wildlings, you need to, all of the players, let's say the wildlings, they start off and they're at a strength level of 2. They can ultimately get up to a strength level of 12. You have to bid enough power tokens, enough money, so that it equals or beats the wildlings' strength. So if it's strength 2, easy peasy. If it's strength 12, that's harder. If you don't succeed in beating them off, something bad happens. And if you're the player who bids the lowest, something really bad happens. I'm speaking from experience. At one point during the game, the wildlings came up as a random card for the Westeros phase. And I was like, I don't have much power token. So I didn't bid anything. So everyone's holding out their hands, closed as a fist with what's in there, right? And then they go, and they open up their hands, and Carrie had a bunch of power tokens in it, and John had some, and I was like, poof, none. And it's like, oh, I'm thinking, I don't have any. What am I going to do? Here you go. I need to save them for later on. So we didn't succeed in beating them back. And as a result, my king died. I'm House Baratheon and dead. So I lose that card. You have a deck of cards of characters. When all your characters are used or dead, they can come back. You can cycle them again. But gone. Most powerful card in my deck. Gone. Couldn't use. It was like, whoa, that was pretty bad for me, but not as bad as it could have been for it. In the Westeros phase, some good things can happen. You can flip over a card, and it can be that you have a special muster phase. Muster is how you increase your army. For every territory you control that has a fortress or castle on it, you can muster a strength 2 worth of army. So for your forces, you get a few options. You have footmen, think of them as infantry, they're strength 1. You have knights, which are strength 2. You have ships, which are strength 1. You have fortresses, like defensive forts, that I think are like strength 2, I believe. I might be wrong on that. And then you can also build siege towers, which have, I think they're strength 4, for mustering purposes. They're really good on attack if you're attacking a city or a fortress, a castle. I'm not so good on defense. And if you are mustering in a territory that you control that has a city, you can only do strength 1. So that means you can put an infantry there. Or if you had an infantry unit there, you could upgrade it to a knight. So that's a good thing that can happen. You're limited in your army size by your supply. There's a track, really, that keeps track of what you can have, how many armies of 3 units you can have, how many of 2, how many of 1. And it depends on how many territories you control that have these little supply barrels on it. It represents food, water, that kind of stuff, all your provisions. So the more of those you control, the larger army you can have, but it maxes out, you know, at a certain configuration. After you do the Westeros phase, you then give orders to your forces. You give orders to each territory that contains units of yours in it. It's not orders per unit. So you can have a territory with an infantry guy, a knight, a ship, maybe if you're on the coast. You're giving it to all of the units on the land, and all separately from that, all the units of the sea. So you give a unit to your sea units there, because that's a separate zone, really, and you're giving it to your land units. You're not giving it to the infantry guy gets one and the knight gets another. No. It's that army gets one. Your orders are varied, and they're actually really cool. They're very well thought out. They go, again, in special order. You can give raid orders. Raid orders allow you to remove specific enemy tokens in adjacent spaces or territories. You can remove enemy raid tokens, you can remove enemy support orders or defensive orders. You can also do a support order. A support order allows you to support your troops in adjacent territories so that if they're getting attacked or they're going to attack, your armies nearby are treated as if they're engaged in the battle. You can give defense orders, which gives you basically a bonus to if you get attacked in that zone. And then finally, you can get consolidate power orders. Sorry, I was looking at my notes. I'm like, wait, finally, I missed one. But you can consolidate power orders. What that does is that generates a power token, and you actually get a second power token if you're doing it in a zone that has a little icon on it. That's a consolidate power order. It looks like a little crown, right? That's not enough. But it looks like you gather an influence. As I said, you use that when you're bidding, and you also use it to control zones, territories that don't contain armies of yours. So if you give the other order, which is a march order, it allows you to move your units around, whether to attack or just shuffle them around. If you're giving a march order to go from one territory to another, and you leave the territory you're leaving that they started in becomes empty, you no longer control that area. But you can choose to spend a power token, you put it in that area, and that denotes that you control it. If one of your opponents comes in there, they then control it with their army, and you don't get that power token, it goes in your discard pile. So that's a danger. But at the same time, you want to control these zones. You win the game, as I said, it's 10 rounds. At the end of 10 rounds, if you are the player with the most number of territories on your control, you win. Or, at any point during the game, literally any point during the game, you are the player that controls 7 territories that have cities or fortresses / castles in them. So as we played, at one point, I was getting up there, and I didn't even realize it. I'm House Baratheon, and so I end up taking King's Landing, which is really hard, because that's a neutral zone, it's strength 5 army, and I go in with my general, I'm like, I'm gonna go in, I get all buffed up, and I gave him a march order. And since I gave him a march order, that triggered his special ability that caused him to flip over, and when he flipped over, he gets a bonus, he's like strength 2 to attack, plus he can then do a march order because of that. So I built up an army, small army, but it was enough that I could go in, take King's Landing, which was really good. So I get all that power and influence. And then I slowly sent some forces down south into House Martell area and down into the south, southern coast. And I was trying to pick off some places there. I didn't realize that I was actually really close to getting Saruman castles or cities. I think I had like 6 or 5. And Cary, as a Lannister, he had grabbed some area near me, but not much. And he's pushing up the western coast near the Twins. And down from the north, the Starks, John came. And so they're fighting over this one particular zone. I can't remember the name of it. I don't have the map in front of me. They're fighting over this one particular zone with their big armies that are going back and forth. And next thing you know, they have this battle. And it looks like John's going to get slaughtered because it looks like he's going to lose. And when you do combat, it's straight up who has a higher strength versus who has a higher defense value. But then you pull a card, you choose actually from your deck of those characters. Remember I mentioned earlier that when the wildlings came through and I wasn't able to bid any power tokens, I lost my king from there. He's really, really strong. So John had one. We have unique deck, each of us, to what our house is. And he had one that was a perfect card to play. It was ultimate defense that basically said he doesn't take any casualties from it. If you flip a card that you pull and it has sword icons on it, each sword icon, if you win the combat, ends up meaning you kill one of your enemy units. It could be the knight, it could be infantry, you know, whatever you have. Carrie had it set up where he was going to kill two or three of John's units, which would have almost completely wiped out John's army there. John played the perfect card. So all he had to do was he retreated. So they backed up into a friendly territory, and then Carrie was there. But Carrie abandoned it because, having played the game a lot, he saw that I was in a good spot, which I didn't realize. I really didn't. So he started coming down to challenge me. He took Highgarden from the Martells, so I gave him another space. And then he started bumping in and grabbing some area and basically preventing me from doing anything. And so I had to start fighting the Lannisters, and I didn't have much of anything. So it was rough. I really do enjoy this game. It's one I think I need to play more often. We had to end the game early, partly for a couple of reasons. One, John had to get going. He had some stuff going on. But also, it was getting late. It was after like 10 o'clock. And this is going to make me sound like an old man. It really is. But ever since the baby was born, I got to bed really early. Right now, I'm recording this. It's 8:30 on a Monday night. On school night, right? And normally, I'm in bed like 7:30 or 8. So I was up. Well, I'm up late now. But I was up really late when I was playing board games. And Game of Thrones was the second game that we played. We started off with 1775, which I'll get to in a minute. So we had played 1775 for a little while, maybe an hour or so, and then we got into Game of Thrones. And I really think Game of Thrones, even though it has that finite time limit, because it's 10 rounds that you play, 10 turns, there's a lot that goes on in each turn. And if you've never played before, as John never played, and this was basically my first time playing, because it was so long, you spend a lot of time trying to figure out, what are you going to do? And just sitting and thinking and just waiting. And you're like, well, am I going to do this? Am I going to do that? I don't know. And like, I would go back and forth. I'm going to use this card. I'm going to use this card. I want to do that order. I don't know. And John, the same thing. Like, he just spent a lot of time just trying to figure out and think, what should I do? And even if you are a pro and you play this a lot, you're probably still going to spend a lot of time on each round, each turn, just being like, I want to do this and I want to do that. And then resolving all of it. It's a time intensive game. I think, in the future, should I play, and I would love to play this again, I really have to make a point of maybe making it the only game that's played, or play much earlier in the day. We got together at like 7 o'clock, I think, 6:30, and by the time we got going, you say hi and you catch up and all that kind of stuff. It's been a while since any of us had seen each other, and then like 1775 and then get into this, like it's just late, and like I found myself nodding off, and I felt terrible because I was having fun. I don't want people to think I was not having fun, but I'm there and I'm like, I'm usually in bed like an hour and a half ago, and I'm just going, oh, I'm just fading. And I don't want to be rude because I'm having a good time, and yet just I'm not used to being up that late. So it was good that the game ended when it did. One thing that I do have to say about this is I love that there are no dice involved. It's not up to randomness in any way, shape, or form, and that you, as a player, decide what you're going to do. You plan it out, and you have to decide what your opponent's going to do. It's very tactical in that sense. It's not, okay, I decide I'm going to do this, and my opponent decides they're going to do that. But then we got to roll the dice and see what's going to happen. We got to spin a spinner. We got to, you know, rock, paper, scissors, and hope for the best. There's none of that. You know, so you do your thing, and then you compare the stuff, and you're done. And that's that. So it's really a game of wits. You have to be on your toes. You have to know what you're doing. And just like the book, all the books, and the TV show, you have to be very careful when you play the Game of Thrones. Because maybe if you're not successful, you'll lose your head. It's worth it though. It's a really good game. I'm very happy Carrie brought it out and suggested we play it. And I'm glad we gave it a chance because it's a lot of fun. Definitely one that I have to play more often. I don't play board games enough in general because my wife's not really a gamer. And any of these strategy kind of board games that are very long, not her thing. She prefers like a party game, something light and simple. Well, not simple necessarily, but light and quick. And I don't mind something more involved. not advanced squad leader. Adrian, if you're listening, that's not one of them, but something a little bit more involved. So it's not something I'm going to get to play at home. I only get to play if I go for board game night or game night. As I said, that doesn't happen very often. The other game I want to talk about is 1775. As I mentioned at the start of the show, I've talked about this before. I actually talked about it in episode 115. That's like a lifetime ago, isn't it? Wow. 115, which was 1775, the board game. And I did it again in a recast episode of 115. And in that recast episode, I think that was December 2014, was it? I think when I did that one. Because I played it solo for my birthday when I turned, what was that, 33? And so I played it. I talked some more about why I love the game and how you play and everything. So I'm not going to explain how to play it. And I know when I talked about Game of Thrones, I gave an overview of how to play it. I'm sure I left tons of stuff out. If you're a fan of the Game of Thrones board game, if you're familiar with how to play, I probably messed some stuff up. Please correct me if I'm wrong, really. Send me an email, jonathan@wargamingrecon.com. You're like, Jonathan, you talked about the game, but you got this wrong, or maybe you should have clarified this. I would love to hear from you, and I'll fix that. For 1775, if you've never played before, I'm going to tell you to do something that I hate to do, which is to go back and listen to episode 115. I'll have a link in the show notes, but listen to that, because I talk about how to play it, and I don't want to spend time in this episode rehashing something I've already done. Some of you have heard that episode, and if you haven't, I would encourage you to listen to it, but if you have heard it, you don't want me to go through it all again, because then the episode's over, and I don't get to talk about the new stuff I want to cover. What I do want to talk about this time is, there are some differences in playing it this time. Usually, when I play 1775, and I played it maybe a few dozen times, it's one of those board games that actually a lot of people seem to really like when I pull it out, and so I get to play it over and over again, which is great, because often when I buy a board game, it either doesn't get played at all, or it's played once, or twice. At most, maybe. And when board games are like 50 or 60 bucks, you really have to wonder, is it worth the money for it? If I'm not playing it at all or only playing it once. This game is completely worth the money because I've gotten a lot of gameplay out of it and it is just, it ends up being just really fantastic. Right now, 1775, officially it's 1775 Rebellion, but it's by Academy Games on sale on Amazon for under $50. I'll have a link in the show notes, and I should say it's an affiliate link, just to let you know. It doesn't cost you any extra, but Amazon gives me a little something for referring you to them. The game's normally $70. I think that's what I paid for it, actually. But I saved 20 bucks by buying it on Amazon. If your friendly local game store has it, pick it up there. It's hard to come by, honestly. Not many game stores near me carry it. I believe I bought my copy from Crossroad Games. They're up in Maine, near Portland, Maine, and they were down at TotalCon, I think it was a few years ago when I bought it. And they've been at TotalCon every year, but I think it was a few years back when I bought it. Worth every penny, absolutely. When I play this, normally what happens is certain things happen over and over and over again. It's pretty standard how the game goes, and yet it's unexpected because with the game, you never know when it's going to be your turn. Each, there's like five rounds, I think it is. But in determining which of the four factions gets to go, you have a bag, a little cloth bag, and in there are colored cubes. A red cube, a blue cube, a white cube, and a yellow cube. Blue for Continental Army, white for Patriot Militia, the American Militia, red for the British Army, of course, and then you get yellow for the British Loyalists. You reach in, you pull it out, you don't know what you're going to get. They're all identical cubes except for the color. Pull it out, you put on the thing, and that's who gets to go. So it changes. And that causes some unexpectedness. And some people don't like this random turn order. I think it's fantastic. I really do. And I think it's one of the ways that makes it possible for you to play solo, which I do promise one of these days I will cover how to play it solo. You have to be willing to be fair, but you can do it. Because of this random turn order and some of those stuff, there is some unexpectedness in it. But generally, the game tends to focus on certain things. It tends to be true to how the war was historically, where there's conflict and fighting in New England, some of the mid-Atlantic states near New York, Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland. The British / Loyalists build up their forces in Canada, in Quebec, Montreal, Nova Scotia, and then they come down. The Americans, I'm referring to Americans, I understand they weren't really Americans at that time, the colonists, both the Continental Army and the militia, they build up, they try to control New England as much as possible, use that as a base, and then they try to do battles there and a little bit here, a little bit there. Some New York maybe, some Pennsylvania, as I said, Maryland, Delaware, and Jersey. I've seen a lot of conflict up in Maine, in New Hampshire, and Vermont, where the Americans might think that they control it and they take it from the British and the British come back or vice versa. I've seen it. One of the wackier things I've seen is the Americans, I think something I had done as Americans, going and attacking by boat up to Nova Scotia, which was empty. British thinking, Americans aren't going to get up there. And going there and threatening Montreal, and by taking Nova Scotia, removing Nova Scotia from gameplay, basically, and causing the British forces to spend more time up there, and thereby using that as a diversion. The one other wacky thing that I've ever seen, and by wacky I mean unusual, it doesn't happen often, outside of this past time playing, was again with the Americans, where there's a card, and I forget who gets it, but it's a special event card. It's called like Ben Franklin. It might be Continental Army. I'm not sure. I wish I could remember. It's probably Continental Army, actually. But you get to land, I think it's 6 cubes of French army, French infantry, into Georgia, into Savannah. You get to do it, and you place them there, whether you control it or whether the enemy controls it. Enemy controls it, you fight, you're probably going to win. The French infantry, the French army, is as good as the British army. If you're not sure what I mean, when you attack, you roll dice. These are colored dice, and their facings differ depending on what faction it is. For the British army, 3 sides of the dice, which is half of the dice side, have hit markers. Hit marker means you kill one of your opponent's cubes, people. And then the other 3 sides are command decisions. They're blank. And what that does is that allows you to, for free, redistribute 1 of your cubes per blank side that you've got to an adjacent empty space or adjacent space that you control. So if you're fighting the battle and it doesn't look like it's going well, but you just want to throw it out, you can move it around. The French have the same thing. Everyone else has another marker on at least one of the sides, which is a person running, which means they flee. They come off the board and they go into a special zone and they stay out of combat, out of play really, until the next round, next time that faction gets to bring in reinforcements. That can be deadly having them taken out. I mean, they're alive. They're not like gone for good, but really takes them out of the play. So the French are amazing. So when this one other time, again, I think it was me, played the card and got in, there's a lot of combat down in the south. Georgia fell to the Americans and then they slowly worked their way up. It was amazing. Well, things were very, very different this past weekend when I played this game. So I again played with Carrie and with John, and John, I think, had only played once, maybe twice. And I think Carrie only played once as well. He played with me at TotalCon for his first time. Happened to have, and Carrie and Pat and I had played. Pat, of course, I've mentioned on the show before, fantastic gentleman, and he's a supporter of Patreon for us here on the show. So thank you, Pat, for your support on Patreon, by the way. This is such a good game. But since both John and Carrie hadn't really played very much, they thought, oh, you know, we'll team up and they'll play against me because I played more. Doesn't mean I'm good. I should point that out. This game is like Pandemic. If you've ever played Pandemic, you can be playing and thinking you're going to win and thinking things are going good, and bam, card comes up, there's an outbreak, and the disease is spread everywhere and ripple effect, and then you lose. This game could be very much like that. You think, I got a stronghold here, I'm going to get enough colonies so that I can control this and do well, and then bam, card comes out that your opponent plays, something goes on, and you're just lost, right? So the very seat of your pants, and I like that, but you can't sit on your laurels. You just can't do it because something will happen. And playing a lot of games doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win. Doesn't mean you're going to lose either. It just doesn't mean much of anything. So that's what they decided. I said, okay, that's fine. And they wanted the British. So Carrie played as the British Army. John was as the Loyalist. And I was all of the Americans. As I said, this game, very, very different from any game I played. And right from the beginning, turn 1 comes out, right? And a lot of combat was happening down south. Carrie and John were like, oh, we'll move this here, and move these here, and this fighting. And I'm like, what the heck? There's never fighting down in South Carolina and Georgia. It doesn't happen in this game. People just don't fight, except for one game way, way back when it was like the first game I played, and we didn't know really how to play. We messed up pretty bad. I think it was playing with Adrian, and we thought you could put reinforcements in any space that you had troops. You place reinforcements in colonies you control, but they can only go into a zone in that colony where there's a city. It makes the big difference. So that very first game, we were like, we'll build up down here and here because we have a unit here and we can... No, you can't. We really messed that up. This game, things went how it's supposed to. And they did so well down there. And they didn't control the colonies, but they did well. I was like, whoa, maybe I got to think about sending stuff down there. So like I can capture Boston and control Massachusetts. And I, of course, controlled Rhode Island and Connecticut. We have some combat going on the Mid-Atlantic states, and I'm trying to take New York City, which didn't work very well. I try to take Delaware, it doesn't work very well. I try to take Maryland, doesn't work very well. But we're doing this and that and everything. And it's a pretty straightforward game, pretty standard, balanced, other than that beginning of the turn one with that combat down south. But then I thought I was being pretty clever when turn two came around. So it's round two, turn two, my turn, the turn two. And in turn one, Carrie played a truce card. So I know I said I'm not going to explain how to play the game, but this is important for me to clarify for those of you who aren't familiar or who don't remember this. You win the game when two truce cards are played, either both from one side, so both of the British ones, the British and the Loyalists, one from each, they only have one, or one from each side, one British or Loyalist and one American or militia. That's when the game ends. And then you win by having more colonies than your opponent. If it's a tie, colonies become part of Canada. And Canada is not part of the British Empire or whatever. So it's a separate thing. It's like a French Dominion or something. So basically, a tie is really lose-lose in my opinion. But okay. So that's what happens. Carrie played a truce card in turn one because it let him move like four armies on a spot. He just wanted to move a lot of stuff around and try to, you know, control some area. We didn't have a lot of cubes on the board, but he was spreading out and trying to do his thing. And it made sense to me. And then in turn two, this is when I made a really big mistake. Because I misremembered part of the rules on winning the game. I remembered that you need the truce card. So Carrie had one out, and I thought, oh, I have a truce card in my hand. I can play it, and then I'll win because I have more colonies under my control. I think I have like seven or six under my control. They had like three. Like, I'm going to win. I just have to get to the end of this round because I think we still had to pull two or one more cube left. So it was one more person was going to go, and it wasn't going to be me, I think. So I got to get through this, right? And then I'll win. It'll be fast game, but that's okay. Cause I'll win. It'll be cool, right? And then we can play something else. Well, I played it. I did the stuff. And after I played it, literally moments after I played it and I sat with my armies, it hit me. Oh man, that's not how it goes. So it's true. It's absolutely true. You look in the rule books, ask anyone who's played this game and knows what they're doing. It's completely true. You either need to have both truce cards by the Americans or both by the British or one of each to end the game, but you don't check for game winning / game ending criteria until the very end of round three and each round after that. So you play three rounds where everyone, all the factions get the turns, they all get their turn one in round one, they all get their turn in round two, they all get their turn in round three, and at the end of round three, after the last faction is gone, you then look and you see, do we have any truce cards out? Does the game end here? And who's won? You do not check for that at the end of round one, nor at the end of round two. So I was wrong, and I had myself in a pickle. I'm thinking, oh, crap. What the heck am I going to do? It's end of round two, and I knew I had to go a whole nother round, all of round three, to try to just hang on. And I didn't want to talk about it because I was like, they know what's going on. I've already told them. Before the game started, I went over all the rules with John. I explained everything with everyone. I was like, this is how you win, this is that. I was like, they know, I don't need to be the dead horse. So we'll just go and we'll see what happens. So we're playing round three and we're going, and like I said, I was wrong with what the victory conditions were, but round three's going, and it just so happens that John and Carrie had shorter memories than I thought they did. Because in round three, British actually end up taking control of Georgia finally. They take control of South Carolina, and I was like, oh man, it's getting close. I might not win this thing. And I can't undo what I did at the end of the round. That's that, no matter what. So I'm playing every special event card that I have. And for whatever reason, this game, I had more special event cards in my hand than ever before. I'm playing, I think, Betsy Ross. I'm playing ones for my militia where the British Loyalists, instead of them fleeing, they come back as militia. And my militia don't flee. I'm playing things where I get to land French troops in Newport, and I get to do this, and I get to bring Native Americans in with my forces, and just, I play George Washington, which lets me move an extra army in addition to what's ever on my movement card. And I'm pulling out all the stops, everything possible, right? Just tons and tons of special event cards in the hope that I can break free from tyrannical King George and get freedom and say, bleep you, George, and your Stamp Act too, right? And I'm just trying. And I had seven colonies, and then they're up to five, and they're up to six. And then we were tied. I was like, oh man, it's my turn. So I push and I try to take Pennsylvania and I lost Pennsylvania and then I get it back. I'm trying to take Delaware and I think I'm going to get it. And no, Maryland just, it's so freaking tight. And so it goes and I did this push and then just, I'm trying and hoping I'm going to get Maryland. And I roll like crap and I should have had enough stuff, but they were just taking me out. So I couldn't get Maryland back, which is what I needed. They had one zone of Maryland under their control with not like two or three cubes, and I couldn't take it. So round three ends, we have to check victory conditions. So round three ends, and I say, okay, let's see. We got to check who won. I go, oh, it's a tie. Carrie looks at me. He's like, what are you talking about? And he's confused, and John's confused. And I'm like, well, you played a truce card, right? In round one, during your turn, your very first turn, I played one in round two because I was stupid. I was dumb, and I thought, this is what I had to do because then I could win. Game ends, and you check for this, you know, at the end of round three and every round after, I explained, but game ends when either both of you play your truce cards or I play both of mine, or we each play one truce card. So you had one and I played one. It's end of round three. We check. We have the exact same number of colonies. It's a tie. Colonies become part of Canada and blah, blah, blah. Game over. It was one of the most bizarre, interesting, and exciting games of 1775 I played in a while. Really cool. A lot of fun. And one thing that I loved about it, more than anything, again, it didn't matter whether I won or lost, because I was having fun, and it looked like the others were having fun. But I could tell they had fun, and this made it a success for me, was at the end of the game, both John and Carrie said that they liked it so much, they want to buy copies of the game. So if you guys are listening to this episode, and if you're not, I'm going to tell you to listen to the episode, I'm going to have a link in the show notes so that you can buy it on Amazon. It's that affiliate link. Like I said, it's not going to cost you anything extra, but Amazon gives me a little something as thanks for referring business to them. So use that link because Battleground doesn't have the game and I don't know if they can even get it. But use the link, get it on Amazon, save yourself some money. Like I said, on Amazon, it's $49.74, under $50. Normally it's $70. It's worth $70, don't get me wrong, but why pay $70 when you can pay $50? Especially if your local game store doesn't have it. Buy it on the link. I get that referral bonus. You save yourself some money. If you guys have Prime, you get free 2-day shipping and you're golden. So that was board game / game night. And I'm looking forward to being able to do game night again. I don't know when, really. And I'm mentioning this also because it's going to tie into the show. But over the next few weeks, my life is very, very, very busy on weekends. So this coming weekend, after I record, which will be the first weekend in May of 2016, my family's actually celebrating my wife and my wedding anniversary. It's not actually the anniversary. Our wedding anniversary is May 7th. But again, life is just really busy. So we're doing that. And then the following weekend, I believe it is, we have another party to go to for one of my little cousins, a birthday party. So that puts me out of action then. And then the following weekend, going away with my parents, which is going to be a lot of cool. And the following weekend's another party. And actually one of those weekends in there, I'm sure I have it wrong, is, huzzah. Actually, I do have it wrong. Not this coming weekend, depending on when you're listening to it. But the weekend of May 14th and 15th, is Huzzah begins actually May 13th. So be up in Maine at Huzzah, doing a live recording from there. And just from now until then, this is the week of April 25th, April 24th really. But from this week on, every week, stuff's going on. And so important for me to mention because I have another episode coming out at some point. I gotta double check. I'll tell you near the end of the show when that is, but I'm gonna have to record some point and do a thing there. So it makes it tricky. But I'm also mentioning it because during board game night, it was mentioned that they want to get into doing like our own mini Battlefleet Gothic League, kind of story based with like a map and all that kind of stuff. I think it'd be really cool. I do have some BFG stuff. I think mostly painted, probably at my parents' place. I don't know where it is. It is what it is. So I would have to borrow someone's stuff and play. And if that's an option, that'd be cool. But my availability is not there for playing game night on Saturdays. It makes it tricky even. Without having a kid, which I do, so that makes it extra tricky with everything else. But it's nuts, just so crazy. And I'm sure we all just get so busy is really what it is. So anyway, Game of Thrones board game by Fantasy Flight Games and 1775 Rebellion by Academy Games. Two really great games. You can pick them both up online, and if your game store has it, pick them up from your game store because it is just good to support local business if you use them. And if you don't have a local business or it's not good or you can't get it online. I'll have links to the listings on Amazon, the Game of Thrones 2nd edition board game is $42.23 right now on Amazon. That's 30% off. I'll have a link. Again, it's an affiliate link. It doesn't cost you extra, but Amazon gives me a little something to say thanks for sending business their way. And 1775 Rebellion is $49.74. Both really great games. At this point, we're coming to one of my favorite segments of the show, and that is Mailbag! Mailbag is a great part of the show because it's when I get to share some comments, constructive criticism, and feedback that I get from listeners like you. I love to hear from all of you. Communicating with the listeners and this community of wargamers that we have is my favorite part of podcasting and wargaming. It's just, I love getting to know all of you. I love getting to share some of myself with you, getting to talk about this hobby that we love. So from Facebook, actually, has some cool stuff going on. Some really cool stuff. So it's probably early to be talking about this, but in November, I'm going to be doing the Extra Life 24-Hour Gameathon again. And that's where, for 24 hours, I play games and raise money to benefit Boston Children's Hospital. Now, what Extra Life does is it's a charity, so all your contributions are tax deductible per law, however it is for wherever you are. But they raise money, and the money that they raise, it goes to pay for medical treatment for kids who need help, but their families can't afford to pay for it. Kids who have cancer, leukemia, cystic fibrosis, you name it, just really, really scary things. And these families that can't afford to pay for their kids to get their medical help. I don't know what it's like to have to deal with that. I can't imagine if my daughter needed some treatment and my wife and I couldn't afford to pay, like we can't do it. It'd break my heart. It breaks my heart right now just thinking about it. And we're fine, but we don't have to worry about it. But not every family is so lucky. Extra Life it's a godsend. It really is, to help lots of families. And Extra Life is awesome because they're affiliated with hospitals all over the place. So a lot of people, a lot of gamers do Extra Life because there's a kid's hospital near them, a children's hospital near them that can benefit. Boston Children's Hospital is one of the best children's hospitals in the entire world. Lucky to be living in a place where this is. And so I am just grateful to be able to help them out any way I can. I've been doing it for a handful of years. And like I said last year, actually, when I talked about Extra Life, my daughter's benefited from Children's Hospital, not from Extra Life, because again, we can afford to pay for stuff, but specialists from Children's Hospital helped see her and deal with some of her gastric issues and different things and just helped her to get going, and just fantastic pediatricians and specialists there. So she's benefited from just their knowledge and their expertise. And that's even relatively minor. Kids go there because it's just really, really, really scary, scary things that they have to deal with. They get the treatment and the help that they need. So what's really cool and happy, unlike this, I'm tearing up, but unlike this, is that listener Dave from War Games at Battlestades, a Facebook group, he's been a huge supporter of what we do here at Wargaming Recon in general, through Patreon and all sorts of stuff, but especially Extra Life. So he, way back, he started off on his own. He did a charity auction on eBay and painted a figure and auctioned it off and then donated all the proceeds. So then last year in 2015, he painted a figure again. It's become like this thing. It's a tradition. It's awesome. I love seeing this all just from the community, this excitement building up. Last year he painted it, sent it to me. Gorgeous, beautiful. I auctioned it off to take that burden away from him. I did it, donated all the proceeds to Extra Life. So this year he's done it again, and it's even better than before. So he posted online some photos of what he painted. It is Napoleon as First Consul, 1800. It's a metal 28mm figure by Trent Miniatures, sculpted by Mark Copplestone. He's painted it. It's gorgeous. It's just absolutely gorgeous. You'll be able to get some sneak peeks on the Facebook page, and I'll be auctioning it off in November of 2016 for the Extra Life 24-Hour Gamerthon. Proceeds from the auction will go to benefit Boston Children's Hospital and help those kids in need. And what's even cooler, the model is, it's one of the best I think he's ever painted. It's beautiful. I'm sorely tempted that when it comes, just make a sizable donation and say, forget the art. I'm not going to do that because that's not right. But, oh man, it is so, so beautiful, which is gorgeous. But because he did that, he posted about it on the Battleshades Facebook group. And another member of the Battleshades Facebook group saw it and was like, what is Extra Life? So of course I responded and explained what it is and what they do. And he was just so interested in it and thought of it as such a worthwhile charity that he volunteered to paint something. So I'm talking about Stuart Foley of paintedwargamefigures.co.uk, and he painted a model and he shared a picture of the model and he's going to be sending it to me. It's another beautiful model. It is Frank Gallagher from the UK TV show Shameless. It's a 28mm hassle-free miniatures model sculpted by Kev White, and Stuart painted it with GW and Vallejo paints. Like I said, it is beautiful. This would be perfect for any post-apocalyptic game. You want to play any zombie game, modern game. Just, it's awesome. A lot of great characters. You could use it in role-playing games too, actually. As well as you could use the Napoleon first console figure in role-playing games. Might be kind of hard though, because he's on a horse and it's rearing up. He's like, the Frank Gallagher model, much easier to use for role-playing games if you wanted. It's all sorts of different things. Pulp games could benefit from it. Mike Payne, maybe you could have a use for it in something. I don't know. He'd be awesome in Hang High, actually. Mike, I think when I auction it, you should bid on it. Is what I think. Or someone should bid on it for you and donate it for some of the Hang High games. So that this would be awesome. So anyway, 28mm by Hassle Free Miniatures. Great miniature company. It's sculpted by Kev White. Painted with Citadel and Vallejo paints. Sneak peek of that will also be on the Facebook page, our Facebook page. So you'll be able to see that. I'm very excited about it. I want to remind all of you that Huzzah is coming very quickly. You want to register because events are filling up fast. I got into all my events, but a lot of them are gone. If you want to stay up to date, check the Huzzah Facebook page. But if you want to register, go to wargamingrecon.com/Huzzah, H-U-Z-Z-A-H, Huzzah register. And then I need to thank our sponsor, which is the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They put on Huzzah. I am so grateful for their very generous support and encouragement. So I'm sure that all of you will join me in thanking them. As I said, Huzzah is happening May 13th through the 16th, 2016. I will be there. I'm doing a live recording Sunday morning. I think it's at 10 a.m. It's going to be about an hour. Then I got to skedoodle out and come home with my wife and the baby. I'll be playing in some games. At the live recording, Adrian Benson will be joining me again. We'll be talking about all the cool stuff that we will have done at the con. Should be a blast. A lot of fun. And you're invited to come and watch because it's a live recording. Maybe not as much audience participation as you might expect, but you get to see us in action, see how it goes. And, I'm sure if there are people in the audience at some point, I'll be like, hey, anyone want to say quick something, get a question or whatever? And you can raise your hand and be like, yeah, me. And I'll say, yes, you, sir, or ma'am, down in the back. What do you got? And then we're like, well, Jonathan, I was wondering, what was your favorite game at Huzzah this year? And we're like, well, it's funny, you should ask. And I'll tell you what it is. I'm sure that might not be a question, but if it is, I can answer that for you. And then I also want to remind you about our live page, because I record this live via Google Hangouts. You go to the live page, you can get access to it. There's a chat room and all that kind of stuff. And so that way you can talk about things that are going on, and I try to watch the chat room while I record so I can just interact with all of you, and you can share questions and thoughts that way. I also want to make sure that I thank all the kind people who support Wargaming Recon on Patreon. Without you guys, it wouldn't be possible to continue the show. It really wouldn't. Your support makes a huge difference. So I want to thank Dave and the Wargames at Battleshades Facebook group for your very kind and generous support on Patreon. I want to thank Patrick for all of your continued kind and support and encouragement, and Chris Parker of Battle Games for your very kind support as well. For those of you who do support me on Patreon, and if you don't and you're interested, listen up, because there's some good stuff that can come your way. New episodes get released first to my Patreon backers, and then everyone else. You can become a backer. It's really easy. It's as little as $1 per month, so it's super cheap. Wargamingrecon.com/Patreon will get you there. There's different steps. Basically, you become a backer, you pledge what you want to pledge. I have different reward levels, so you can get all sorts of cool rewards depending on how much you want to give each month. And Patreon, charges you at the end of the month, actually beginning of the next month, and for all the different things. But like I said, dollars, I tip jar level, that gets you in the door. You get new episodes before everyone else. And then you also get free behind-the-scenes content. All backers get free behind-the-scenes content. $5 or more a month, you get a Wargaming Recon bumper sticker mailed to you each month, plus you get new episodes and that kind of stuff. $7 or more per month, I thank you by name in every episode that I release in that month. $9 or more a month, and you get our cool Wargaming Recon postcards. I mail it to you. Nowadays, most of us, the only real mail we get is junk and bills. Nice to get something cool. I do a personal message on the back and send it to you. It's really cool. This is my favorite reward. I really enjoy doing that. $15 or more a month, and you get a Wargaming Recon measuring tape sent to you. It's perfect size that you can keep in your pocket. keep it in your game bag. You never have to be without it. I don't know about you, but there's been a ton of times I've gone to the game store or convention or wherever and been like, I don't have a measuring tape. What am I going to do? I got to buy one. Easy. It gets sent to you and you're golden. $22 or more a month and you get a t-shirt. It's one of our white t-shirts every single month. I'll send it to you. I know I've been waffling. I've been going back for like every single month to get that. $22 or more each month you get one. Let's say you want more than one t-shirt. $40 or more a month, you get two t-shirts. This actually makes it cheaper, right? It ends up bringing it down to $20 a shirt, instead because since I can order it in bulk and everything, it ends up costing a little less. If you want three t-shirts a month, it's $55 per month, and each month I'll send you three. So let's say you and a bunch of your buddies want t-shirts. You back the show, you pay the $55, and that lowers the cost of the t-shirt to, what is it? I'm not so good with the math. Right on my feet. It makes it, and let me just pull up my calculator and be really professional. It makes it $18 and change instead of $22 for one. So you plan ahead. It's golden. I'm going to have a new reward actually coming out soon. I'm still finalizing some of that. I've been doing some research, I guess you could say, online on it. So I don't want to give too much away about that just as of yet. And then we got a review on iTunes that I want to share. So there's a 5-star review titled, It Has Begun, from Uncle Tanner. Quote, engaging, entertaining, and knowledgeable. This host brings a passion to the board in this podcast. If you're a gamer, especially if you live in the New England area, this podcast is for you. If you're outside of that, you should still subscribe. You'll be missing out if you don't. So thank you very much to you, Uncle Tanner, for your very kind review and rating us 5 stars and leaving that review. If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, please do. I love getting your reviews and your ratings on iTunes. I'm asking you to please give us your reviews. WargamingRecon.com/iTunes. Bring you right there. Or if you're in iTunes, you just open it up and rate us and review us. I get all the reviews. I'm able to capture all of those. And then I read all of them on the air. So when you leave your review, right, make your review. If you have a website, put your website in there. Put the name in there. Put the web address. I will mention it on the air when I read your review. So I do read all the reviews here. I'm very appreciative of all of them. They are very encouraging because it's great to hear back from everyone. Not everyone likes to send an email or go on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, but you can leave that review and share what you think about the show. I love these honest reviews and what people feel about Working and Recon. It really helps to motivate me and keep me going and put that little extra step in liveliness in my step for when I feel the show. So it makes a huge difference. And I am just most grateful for the kind of reviews and all of everyone's support from sponsors and Patreon and just everything. Thank you. Really, thank you. And at this point, I do just want to remind you of two last things. First of all, the episode guide is very important because it tells you all the cool stuff that's going to be coming up. So for example, by looking at the episode guide, and I'll have a link in the show notes, don't worry, it tells me, for example, that the next episode comes out on May 9th, 2016. And I don't have a topic as of yet for that, but don't worry, I will. But then also, coming up a little bit further down the road, you can tell, of course, in November, I'll be doing the Extra Life 24-Hour Gamerthon and the Holiday Gift Guide 2016 episode. That'll be at the end of November of 2016. That one comes out, first one, then the other. But before that, we're looking at episode 159, comes out on May 23rd, end of May. And that's when I'm going to release the recording that I did at Huzzah. So that'll be Huzzah 2016. I can't tell you what, but I can tell you that episode's going to have a really big announcement. So you need to listen to that episode or watch it live or whatever. But something will be announced and that will be important. And then at the end of June, I'm very excited because Alyssa Faden is going to be coming on the show. I've been wanting to get her on for a while. She's going to be talking about Enfilade, which is a wargaming convention up in Portland. She's going to be talking about Ancient Rome. She's very knowledgeable about Ancient Rome and wargaming Ancient Rome. She's a cartographer and really into gaming and all sorts of stuff. Just a fascinating person. And I'm very, very excited that she's going to come on and talk about these cool things and just wargaming and everything. I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot. You guys are going to learn a lot. And then at the end of July, going to be doing the Great Wargaming Survey 2016. Yasuo Ortiz will be coming on. And we have lots of other episodes and things coming up. And cool things going to be happening. Jamie Searle is going to be coming on. He had to reschedule. But he'll be coming on and talking about what it's like to be a Norwegian wargaming dad. And then I have Josh Shoebridge coming on again. We're finalizing things and talk about how Wargaming helps his depression, actually. So that's going to be really cool and very emotional and raw episode. So that'll be coming out. And that's all I got for you. So thank you, all of you, for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. I want to remind you, the link to the show notes is wargamingrecon.com/WR157. wargamingrecon.com/WR157. That'll get you to the show notes with all the things that we talked about. So remember, no matter how busy you are in your lives, no matter what's going on, you know, you have to keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
You're a wargamer and want to know what to do when you're an Australian wargamer, then you need to tune into the Hobby Desk for Australian wargamers. This is a member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, and we're here to give you the best possible things that Australian wargamers can give to you, the listeners. And I hope you enjoy what we do, because guess what? It's coming more and more often and more awesome for you who listen to the Hobby Desk on the Troll in the Corner podcast network.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016, at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.